Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know how long you guys got, but I can sit. I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
Hello again, everybody. It is the Third Man In Radio here on blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. I'm Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com. Special guest over there at the Committed in the Unit tonight. Our guest is on the line, Sam Fels, editor, writer of the Committed Indian, also secondcityhockey.com. How you doing tonight, Sam?
I'm all right, Chris. How are you?
Pretty well. It's been a long time since I've had the pleasure, Sam. How's your summer been going?
It's been going really well, actually. Very relaxing, a lot of time on the patio, a lot of time grilling. You know, I'm refreshed. Or as fresh as I get, and ready to go in a couple weeks here, back in the lab, editing the works of genius that I always get from you on a weekly basis.
So let's end the controversy. What does Sam Fels do when he takes the entire month of August off?
Pretty much what he does in June and July, which is not much. He just kind of lounges around. Play some golf, play some tennis, maybe play some soccer as well. And he drinks outside a lot.
Oh. I drink inside for the most part, but something similar over here.
Well, the outdoor drinking season in Chicago, it's a very small window. I feel like you have to take advantage of it.
We might as well get kicked off here. News just came down. I don't know if you heard this or not, but the NHL has reprimanded the New Jersey Devils.
I didn't see that.
Yes, for something that apparently, originally they claimed that the New Jersey Devils, Lou Lamoriello and management there in New Jersey did nothing wrong, supposedly. At least the arbiter said so. They didn't like that contract. But today they did, one of the things that I speculated anyway, they New Jersey Devils will sacrifice a first-round pick in one of the upcoming four entry drafts. The interesting thing about that is they will get to choose which one.
So Lou will just choose one that he's not going to be involved in.
Yeah, so basically the thing is that the day after the Stanley Cup, it's got to be one of the next 4 years, but the day after the Stanley Cup is awarded, or won by whoever wins it, Lou Lamoriello needs to contact the league and say, "Hey, this is going to be the year that we give you our first round pick and we sacrifice it." So there's that. But they also lose their third round pick in 2011, and they were fined $3 million. What do you think, Sam?
I think it's utter bullshit. If I can be honest here, the Devils didn't really break any rules here. They didn't do anything no one else has done, and I thought the arbiter's ruling was ridiculous. I thought the whole cancellation of the contract was ridiculous, and I don't think this makes me feel any different. I'm sure the New Jersey Devils have $3 million lying around somewhere, so, while it might seem like a stiff penalty, I'm not sure it is. This whole we're going to make it up as we go policy the NHL seems to have, I think it looks bad. I don't think it works, and they should, they really need to iron this stuff out in the next CBA because it doesn't pass a smell test. I mean, you know, why hurt Luongo's and Hosa's contract are, you know, part of this, but Franzen's and Zetterberg's aren't, and it just seems so arbitrary, and I think it's silly.
Well, I was shocked by tonight's turn of events, because really what they were doing, and, you know, holding up the PA and saying, okay, we'll let this one through, but you're going to have to agree to all this stuff now so we knock these contracts out. You know, if they're saving the owners from themselves yet again. That's, you know, every single time this comes about in a year where they have to redo the CBA, it's basically saving the owners from themselves. It's the owners that are doing
it. Yes.
But they attack the PA.
Right. The PA pays for the owners' mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, I was thinking about this today as I was doing some prep work here. And, you know, I believe the Sabres are the second team in town this year. And I thought the whole point of this salary cap was for teams like Buffalo. So, that, you know, they told us they couldn't compete under this system. And we went to this cap system for teams like Buffalo, a team with maybe the most passionate fan base, at least on this side of the border. They sell out every game. And they're still nowhere near the cap and have to say goodbye to a homegrown player like, you know, Kennedy for over, like, $500,000. Then we go to this so that teams like Buffalo and the like were just as competitive, and it clearly just doesn't work. Or they don't care. Yeah, I don't know which it is.
Well, I mean, clearly in the next CBA, I think the NHL needs to adapt something along the line. And I don't know anything about the NBA and their cap, and someone can correct me or write me a long email explaining it to me. That's fine. I don't know if I'll even read it. But, I mean, I think it's got to be something along what the NBA does, in which you can retain your own players and go over the cap a certain amount or whatever the NBA has.
Right. Well, I believe the way it works, at least the way it used to work, I think it still works this way, that you can sign your own players for whatever, but the cap hit is something only like 15% more than the previous one. So if he was making $3 million, his cap hit only ends up, you know, being a 4 or whatever. But you can pay him $6, $7, $8 million, and that's not the number. And I agree with you, because I think it's really important that players stay in one place. I think that sort of development, and you can identify a player through his team and vice versa, that's a great way to market the sport. Like, it does. I don't think it works. You know, I don't think it would benefit the NHL if one day Sidney Crosby has to not play in Pittsburgh. Or, you know, something like that, you know, or Patrick Kane ends up is not a Blackhawk, which we've talked about, but that doesn't help anybody, I don't think. So that's something they're going to have to address. But is the NHLPA under fair smart enough to get that? Would the owners even accept that? You know, who knows? So.
Yeah, and the other thing, my thought is that, you know, you talk about Buffalo and these cities like Nashville and you know, even Dallas now. Dallas has been on a downslide. Forget about their change of ownership. They've been on a downslide financially for a few years now.
Right.
You know, these teams, all these outer market teams, not, you know, they all have their own, you know, salary caps. So it really doesn't matter what the ceiling is. I mean, to a lot of these teams, it matters what the floor is, because they're like, God damn it, we gotta spend that much money. I mean, that's really what some of these teams are saying to themselves this year.
Right, I mean, and
so high.
It's just ridiculous, because a lot of the owners are clearly not happy with the CBA, because you see teams really not, you know, just wanting to spend to the floor. The players hate it because of the escrow and you know, the lockdown. I mean, look at how many players are just having to sign tryout contracts because of this system. I mean, only the NHL could develop a collective bargaining agreement that no one likes. You know, like there isn't one aspect that everyone seems to agree on. It's sort of depressing to think about, really.
And look at the other thing that it's cost them. I mean, you can say a lot of things about what's happened with the Blackhawks this summer, but I think the one thing that you have to remember is, when's the last time an NHL team won a Stanley Cup with their two best players still on their entry level and supposedly the best defenseman in hockey making $1.5 million? The Blackhawks were stacked. But the problem with the CBA is that, you know, there's very little chance now of the Blackhawks repeating. They'll be in it. They'll have a chance. But we're looking at kind of a lukewarm rebuild to go for it again 2 years from now, or not this coming the season upon us, but next year. And that's a problem, because the Blackhawks are hot, and they mean a lot on the national stage at the moment. And if they have a down year, who knows if they'll be able to regain that heat. So right. you're costing your league. I mean, look at those ratings that the Flyers and the Hawks put up. And, I mean, people are interested in the Hawks. They want to see the Hawks again. And when,
right.
when you have these great teams and these superstar players, and, you know, it's like look at Crosby and Malkin. That's, I mean, just imagine if that's the matchup that comes that can come to be. Well, you're hurting your chances, your odds of having those matchups because these teams have to cookie cut around and bring, you know, the Pisanis and the Poltoonies right. around just to fill out rosters. It's not doing your league any favors.
No, I'm a little more optimistic on the Hawks, I guess, than you are this year. But like, you know, if you look at the NBA, the competition with that league was rebuilt by Lakers Celtics. You know, that rivalry, those two teams constantly matching up in the finals, or those being the teams that everyone knew you had to get through to win for a decade, for a straight up 10 years, and that's what really brought the sport back. You know, and the NHL needs that. It needs like. We might not like it being in Chicago, but it needs the Red Wings to be the Red Wings. You know, it needs the Hawks to be the Hawks. It's a name that when the casual fan hears it, he immediately identifies. Like, you know, you identify San Francisco 49ers, 1980s, you know, New York Giants, late 1980s, like Patriots, you know, turn of the century. Like, the sport is helped by having a constant menace over it, like the Yankees, you know. It does baseball no harm, but the Yankees are always good. You know, I don't care how they do it. The fact that they're always good only helps the sport because everyone can identify them. Everybody knows what they're shooting for. And you know, like the NFL now where they just pass around the Super Bowl title around like a joint. I mean, who cares? You know, like, it'll eventually be your turn. Like, I think the NHL is really, really messed up in not allowing these teams to stay together for a while. Now, the Hawks were in a unique situation, right, because their three most important players were on entry-level deals. I mean, it was always going to be tough, you know, no matter what system they had. But it's something they're going to have to look at.
Right, you mentioned, and I've talked about this in the past, and I think that, you know, the hardcore fans, the ones that consume everything, the ones that listen to shows like these, are sick of the Crosby-Ovechkin thing, apparently, and that's fine. But you mentioned Bird versus Magic. I think that everybody listening to this, if you have a chance, find it on HBO when it gets rerun, is that special that HBO did, you know, the Magic versus Bird, and it tells you, you know, basically step by step how David Stern and the NBA built that league and that franchise off the back of that rivalry. And it's really
right.
the only thing so far that the NHL sort of gets is the fact that they have these two superstars, you know, and they match them up and they put them on TV and they're, in the beginning it was easy because Malkin and Ovechkin hated each other. It's a little bit more difficult now. But it can be centered
right.
on Crosby versus Ovechkin. It's the only thing that they're getting right at this point. And, you know, so I have no problem with the Winter Classic and all of that. But let's talk about Blackhawks. I guess the thing that we should, you know, start off first of all briefly, the prospect tournament currently going on, the Blackhawks prospects will play the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night in London, Ontario. Two games are in the books. Blackhawks got smoked in both of them. Toronto on Saturday night, 6-3, and then Ottawa yesterday afternoon, 7-3. That 7-3 score is a little bit deceiving. The Blackhawks, with roughly half, you know, half the third period to go, were actually up 3-1, and then allowed six goals, six unanswered, and lost 7-3. But that's not good either.
No, that's not encouraging. But you know, I don't really know what to make of that. I caught a little of the game on, was it Saturday night? It's hard to judge. I mean, the Hawks certainly aren't rocking a major goalie prospect in that tournament. He looks pretty awful from what I saw, but, you know.
Yeah,
nobody...
Alex Richards started off really bad. I mean, he had a couple, Nick Leddy, I thought was pretty good on Saturday night. He had a nice box out. He allowed Richards just to square up, one of the, I think it was Bradley Ross, and Ross just far side high glove. Richards just totally whiffed on it. He had another
right.
really bad one. Gave up four in the first, and he did play well in the second and third. He kind of calmed down a bit, but I think the two most important things that I got out of that game, number one, the only player that has a shot of making this team out of camp is Kyle Beach. But, we've known this all along. Can Kyle Beach mentally handle playing at the NHL level? And what I mean by that is can he play hockey at the NHL level and not be a liability that Joel Quenneville can't afford to put on the ice?
All right. you know, I certainly don't know the answer. I mean, he's the one I'm keying on because, you know, I've seen him play. I was at prospect camp last summer. I saw a couple like other games this past season, and I mean, the kid's got talent, and the puck just seems to follow him. He's definitely got a nice set of hands. I mean, 52 goals in junior last year, that tells its own story. But as far as his, I mean, what I will say is, I'm talking to a couple guys who have covered him, you know, like in person, he's apparently, you know, he's a pretty good kid. It's just he has this nasty streak on the ice, and the Hawks certainly have a leadership system in place that, you know, to keep that sort of in check. They never had to deal with anything like that, but, you know, we have this captain here who everyone seems to respect, and we have a great coach, and if he's going to succeed anywhere and keep it in check, I would think it would have to be here, but we're not going to know until he's here, are we? I mean, you know, there's just no way to know.
Yeah, I mean, the things to, you know, the most important things to of note about Beach is, first of all, he's not a fighter. And the Blackhawks are making a huge mistake, and he's making a huge mistake if he comes up here and tries to fight. The reason why he only fights guys that are under 6 feet tall is because he's not a good fighter, and he knows it. And he knows he can't take on the heavyweights. He'll try to do it in training camp, in an exhibition, just to prove a point or show the coaches something. He might get hurt doing it, but he's not a fighter, and he shouldn't fight. He should be a tough guy who finishes his checks, that establishes his physical game out there, but he shouldn't fight. He's got, like you said, he's got a great set of hands. He's got a terrific shot, and he's one of those shooters that finds lanes and he gets the puck to the net, and he's got a quick release. I mean, that's one of the things that we saw on Saturday night. But yeah, he cannot lose. He got a 10-minute misconduct at the end of the second period. Basically, what happened was there was a scrum in front of the Toronto net. And the whole thing was over, but Beach decided to just give one extra shot to one of the Maple Leafs defensemen, prospects defensemen that were standing in front of the net. That guy shoved back, so the linesman, what he should do, I mean, Beach is trying to instigate, trying to continue the scrum, so he's going to pull Beach out of the scrum. Well, as luck would have it, Beach's own stick comes up, clips him, you know, in the mouth. And Beach is all upset about this, so he's yelling and screaming and blaming the linesman that he nearly got his tooth knocked out by his own stick, and he said one thing too many, and he got a 10-minute misconduct. So,
yeah, one thing I will, having read the rap sheet on Beach, is, you know, all of his antics seem to be in defense of a teammate. You know, you don't see him, like, getting in a fight in the locker room or on the team bus. I mean, all his on-ice stuff is in defense or riling up the opponent. I mean, you know, I think in a weird way, I don't know how quite to phrase this, but he's actually a good teammate. He just doesn't know where the line is. You know, he's touched. You know, he's just touched in the head. So there's no way around that. But I don't want him to fight. I don't care if he fights. I'm not, you know, I don't want him to have to feel like he's got to impress the meatballs, you know, in the 300 level. Like constantly dropping the gloves. I just want him to be the big body who can score, you know, like, you know, the Milan Lucic without the punching. Like, I don't care, you know, but I know a lot of people do. But it's the storyline of this season that I'm almost most excited to watch, to see if he does make the team or when he finally gets up there, because he's going to be up at some point. You know, how does he handle it? What does he do?
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, like I said, it's going to be very important for him to have. He's going to almost have to have a flawless camp to make the team, because I do believe Stan Bowman can say whatever he wants, and I know that Adam Johns of the Sun-Times twittered this over the weekend, saying that reminding us that Stan Bowman says that they like that aggressiveness and that on, you know, when Beach plays on the edge. They could say that all they want, but you can't have a guy that's going to play on your second line and hopefully score, even in his rookie year. I think that if he plays 80 games, they would expect him to score 20 to 25 goals. He's that good, you know,
right,
as far as shooting. I mean, he really is. That should be the expectation of him. But you can't have this guy constantly in the box, creating an atmosphere where NHL officials are always watching him. You just can't have it. Any of what you saw, anybody else impress you?
You know, I didn't see a whole lot of it. Like you said, I thought Letty looked pretty good. But, you know, I don't think he's anywhere near ready to be on the roster. I'm hoping he's going to junior this year and not Rockford. I don't know exactly what the plan is, but he's awfully small, which worries me a little.
He was pushed around, yeah.
And so he just needs time in the weight room. And I thought Makarov looked pretty good, but, you know, I don't know exactly where he fits. They've been talking about this kid for a couple of years now, but, for what he's going to be, I mean, I don't think he's not ready to be in a top six yet. And the Hawks don't have room for him there anyway unless they move Sharp. So, but I think, you know, for 2011, he's someone I definitely want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. Rockford's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year. I'm going to be making a bunch of trips out there to keep an eye on a bunch of guys. The one thing I saw over the weekend with Makarov, though, is he doesn't appear to have that extra step to separate himself, from a checker. That's
right.
One thing, and he also seemed a little bit giddy. Not giddy. Giddy's the wrong term, but a little bit nervous almost when someone did step up on him. It was kind of easy to get the puck away from him. So yeah, there's a lot to be excited about with Makarov, but he needs some time. And I don't think that, considering the guys that have had pro experience that are going to be in the camp, I don't think there should be anybody that has any ideas that he's going to make the team out of camp. And it should be, you know, see, that's the thing, Sam, and we kind of know this, but, and I've been talking about this a little bit of late, Blackhawks fans for years and years, and I don't blame Hawks fans for this because it's just, you become accustomed to the only thing to be, you know, around here anyway, the only thing to be excited about is the future. But
right.
Now you're a really good hockey team, and if you want to continue to be one of the elite, you can't afford to bring guys up before they're ready.
No, you can't miss, and you can't miss with draft picks. They're going to have to draft well, but I agree, and they should have that luxury, you know. But we'll see. I mean, I think the guys who are going to fill in this year, I mean, are the ones who are most overcooked. You know, we've been waiting for Jack Skilly for how long? Like, it's either now or never, you know. And Jake Dowell, even though he's going to be on the fourth line, he's been in the system a while. Like, he's put in his time at Rockford. So as long as they don't completely shit themselves, these are the kids who we think are going to be really good. You know, and on the blue line with the top four, there's not room anyway. So those prospects should have enough time to marinate in Rockford, which sounds like a terrible way to spend time, but you get my point.
Other guys I want to point out. Brandon Peary, the other guy, other college kid that was just, I mean, to me anyway, and from talking to people, it appears as though the Blackhawks have singled out two players, Brandon Peary and Nick Leddy. I don't think they're going to junior. I wish they would both go to junior. Brandon Peary, Saginaw isn't the best place for him to play in the OHL this year, but maybe they could work out a trade and just send him somewhere where he can be the guy. He definitely has the speed, and he can really pass the puck. I mean, that's one thing we saw this weekend. His two greatest assets, but I just like to see him play somewhere where he could play in all sorts of situations, you know, kind of learn the defensive aspect of the game a little bit better, and then come to the pros when you're ready to come to the pros. Nick Leddy is the same thing. Nick Leddy should be playing somewhere this year. Rockford's trying to win games too. Rockford's got to sell tickets. They're not in the business of losing. So
simply a production factory, like.
Yeah, if Nick Leddy's having troubles, he's not going to get a lot of minutes. And that's at the age of 19 and 20, a young defenseman needs to play as many minutes as he can. If anybody needs to go back to junior, it's got to be Nick Leddy.
Right. I mean, I like what I see. Everyone raves about him, and you know, apparently just a wonderful skater, and that's great. But I mean, he's got strength and size issues, and that's just going to take time. Like that's not something that happens overnight. You know, like. Your defenseman can't be getting pushed around. I don't care how big you are. You know, it's like you can't do your job.
Right. And the other thing with him, and he is, you know, at this stage, he does look like a Duncan Keith clone. And it's early, but that is a fair comparison at the same stage. But you got to remember, there were a lot of growing pains with Duncan Keith along the way.
His second season, he was a disaster. I mean, like, you know, and we went through it because we knew what he could be, but, you know, he had the rookie year, he was pretty good, but his second season, I mean, he was a fire drill every night, and he sort of grew out of that. He started to grow out of his third year, but his third year, there were some rough moments as well. I mean, defensemen just take a while, and And if Letty needs to play every night, I agree with you. He should be in junior. I mean, he's not going to make the big club. They're not going to call him up. I don't know how many injuries it would take at the big club to get to him, but he's certainly not first or second or third off the bench, so why have him in Rockford? You know, if he's going to be third pairing there, he'd grow much more being first pairing in some junior team, but I'm not calling the shot, so.
Yeah, the Blackhawks have made this mistake before with guys like Steve McCarthy. I mean, they had opportunities to bury guys, not bury guys, but let guys play in the minors for a couple of years, learn the defensive position, and not have to come up and play for a week or two and have bad experiences and take those back down to the minors with you. Again, you're the Chicago fucking Blackhawks now. This isn't
right.
2005. You know, bring guys. If you're gonna mirror your organization after the Detroit Red Wings, do it. I mean, they don't bring guys up till they're ready. How long have we heard about Darren Helm, Justin Abbott?
Right.
You know, and Ville Leino. It took Ville Leino had to be traded before he realized that, he's actually a pretty good player, you know.
Right, yeah.
So just allow these guys the time. One more guy before we move on I want to mention was Sean Lalonde. Holy jeez.
Yeah, not impressive from what I heard.
Forget about, I believe he had four penalties on against Toronto. I mean, this guy is just a complete mess. You know, it was the Toronto. Speaking about the Toronto game specifically, because that's the one I saw from beginning to end. I mean, this is a guy who would step up in the neutral zone to check a guy that didn't have the puck, leaving his point position to be the point of entry on a 2-on-1 break. That happened more than once. And, you know, it's just a complete disaster. You know, I know Jonathan the Fifth Feather and I were talking online, and he said that. Lalonde reminded him of Nathan Dempsey.
That's not a good thing.
No, that's not.
Well, can we talk about the one bad night?
I hope so.
Leave it at that.
So.
Yeah, I'm hoping for it, too.
Moving forward, I don't know about you, Sam, but I like the Ryan Platuni signing.
I do, too. I watched him a lot last year. My colleague McClure, they pointed him out as straight up Versteeg replacement. It's a sort of similar game. 15 goals for the mess that was Edmonton. Now, I didn't watch a lot of Oilers hockey. I'm not, you know, I don't hate myself that much. But, maybe it's just someone Edmonton had to score. But, you know, he's not playing with a lot of talent. I'm very, very interested to see what he does when he's actually playing with people who can play. It's certainly worth a shot. I mean, it costs you virtually nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-way deal, so the Blackhawks aren't on the hook for $500,000 if he's playing in Rockford. Unlike you, Sam, I am the leader of the self-loathing. And
okay.
I watched Edmonton a lot. You know, and I'll say this. I like the signing. He's a guy that could play a little bit, skates pretty well. But I'll say this. Watching Edmonton last year a fair amount, I watched Ryan Platuni play, and I can't, thinking about it, and again, I didn't have him under a microscope because I didn't think that he'd ever be a Blackhawk, but, I mean, there's nothing about his game that stands out to me. And
right.
that's not a criticism or anything like that. It's just there's nothing about him that really stands out. Now, that being said, regardless of whether it's on the Oilers or not, 15 goals, 32 points in 64 games is nothing to scoff at. The only thing that would concern me is why was this guy still a free agent in September? And why did, you know, if he has those numbers and he's, 26 years old, he's a former. Ryan Platuni is a guy, for people that don't know, was a guy that came out of that crop in Philadelphia, very, very highly touted at the time, coming from U.S. college hockey, he was being mentioned up there with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter. That was, he came from that crop. Obviously, didn't have the success that they did, but that's where he came from. And he's the one guy that, considering what it cost and the risk reward, I thought that was an excellent signing.
Yeah, it's what you have to. These days in the NHL, you have to sort of come up trumps on one or two risks like this every year. You know, like, you got to sign guys for cheap and hope they just surprise you. I think he fits in with what the Hawks want to do. He's quick, good with the puck. It's certainly worth a shot. I actually like the Fernando Pisani sighting. I know he's made of glass and all the colitis jokes aside, but you know, they needed a really intelligent forward who can kill penalties and be good in his own end, and he certainly fits that bill. Now, he might only play 45 games a year, but I thought that was the exact type of player they needed to sort of fill that kind of Andrew Ladd role. I know it sounds weird that you're picking off people from the worst teams, bottom six, but I think both of those signings are, you know, they're not going to determine how far the Hawks go necessarily, but I think they'll end up being positive signings.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you on Pisani. I think that was just a dumb signing. You know, and it'd be great if he did play well, because it's a terrific story.
Right.
He does. But, you know, you're it's a shot in the dark on a guy that had one good season, and you're talking about 4 years ago that he had that season. Yeah, I know that he's had, you know, health concerns two of the last 3 years, but I think this is just, to me, it's just a dumb move, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Pisani being waived before December, if he even makes it out of camp. You know, I just don't get that one. And I understand why it happened. I mean, the Blackhawks had Marty Reisner, but they had to trade a guy because they traded Reisner. The reason why they traded Reisner was because that they needed to get rid of salary when they thought that they were going to be able to sign both Jalmerson and Niemi.
Right.
You know, in the summer, you only have the 10% cushion, and the 10% cushion is essentially Cristobal Huue. So,
yeah.
You know, they had to get rid of some salary to fit both of those guys in and announce the Hendry signing and all that. And, of course, that went tits up. But, so essentially Pisani's Reisner's replacement. He's a cheaper guy,
right.
Probably the same guy. But I don't know. I just – when I look at guys that are still out there, because you got to keep in mind, the Blackhawks are very low. I mean, probably Kopechi. You've got some veterans on the club, but where is, you know, I would have liked to have seen a signing where you bring in a guy who has really good experience actually playing on a team that is defending a cup. Ruslan Fedotenko would have been a nice – he's going to the Rangers camp on a tryout.
Right.
I don't know why he's not coming to Chicago on a tryout. Ruslan Fedotenko is known for, you know, big goals and big situations. I'm not pining for Billy Guerin, but that's another guy that's out there. I think that's an element that Stan Bowman missed out on this summer.
Yeah, Billy Guerin would have been interesting. I don't know what he would have come for. And like the Hawks cap situation kept changing because the goalposts kept moving. You know, first we got to sign all these guys, and Ladd had to go so we could keep Niemi and Hjalmarsson, and Hjalmarsson had the offer sheet. So, you know, I think what they thought they were capable of going out and getting just kept changing, and maybe they missed out on some guys that way. But Guerin and Fedotenko would have been all right. You know, our blog was beating the Jay McKee drum there for a while. We thought that might have been a good signing as a third-pairing defenseman. But, you know, they had their reasons. They went other ways. Well, time will tell if it was the right decision.
Well, I'll tell you this. John Scott, just John Scott, period, boggles my mind because he does not fit in at all with what the Blackhawks do. He can't skate.
No, I don't get it either. I'm with you there. I don't get that at all. He can't move. He can't really play from what I've seen. So I don't know what, you know, is he really just around to be a protector? That you can't be wasting a roster spot on someone like that.
No, I mean,
he might be on the same bus as Pisani by the time it's all over.
Yeah, I mean, but that's going back to, you know, it's revisiting the David Krejci era where you have a guy that, okay, that's his role on the team. He's going to go out. He's going to fight. And he skates four or five shifts a game. I mean, that's not
right.
What the Blackhawks need, especially the lack of depth that they're going to have on the third and fourth line.
Right, like, and especially coming off, you know, that season, you know, you're going to want to keep everyone's minutes down for as long as you can. You know, I really hope they're not planning on playing Duncan Keith half an hour a game, you know, right out of the gate. Curious, but you know, we'll see how often he dresses or what goes on with it. But yeah, that's the one I don't get, and someone will have to explain it to me. And I doubt anyone who could is going to talk to me.
Someone eventually will walk out and have a conversation with you in front of gate three, Sam.
Yeah, I'm sure Stan will come out there one day in January when it's 10 degrees and he can break that one down for me.
All right, Sam. Finish the sentence for me. The Blackhawks will repeat as Stanley Cup champions if. There you go.
If they're as top heavy as I think they have to be, which means like I think they're gonna need 40 goal seasons out of Toews and Hossa, and then the requisite, same sort of production in the playoffs, at least 90 points from Kane, and they will repeat if Dave Boland is healthy and productive all year. And that's just the start. So I don't think that's it. Turco can't shit himself, but Crawford has to play well enough so that Turco doesn't have to play 65 games a year, and I think those are, and then they're going to have to, either Skilly or one of Skilly or Stahlberg is going to have to be a surprise. I think it's going to take all of those things. Is that close?
Yeah. I agree with a lot of that. I think one of the most interesting aspects of the season, and in my opinion, the Marty Turco situation, almost exactly mirrors where we were at this time last year with Cristobal Huey.
Right.
Marty Turco himself, at his introductory press conference, said that he's never won a thing. He's never been to a Stanley Cup final. He's only been to one Western Conference final. What are we really, getting with him? He can't play. I don't think he can play 65 games.
I don't think he can play 55 games, to be honest. If you want him to be 35 years old, if you want him as fresh as possible for the playoffs roll around, then I think 50 is the number I'm looking at.
I agree, but here's the situation. And because we experienced this last year in Chicago, and we had you and I and everybody else at McClure and Matt over there at Second City Hockey, myself, everybody that does this, we had to deal with the commenters and emailers about, go to Niemi right away. If Crawford's playing 30, 35 games, he's going to be playing pretty well. So you're going to have
right.
the same situation. I don't think the Blackhawks were very, very fortunate to have Niemi go on that role and be so mentally composed to be able to handle it. By all intents and purposes, the way that Joel Quenneville handled that last year should have cost the Blackhawks a first or a second round exit. But if everything turned out roses for him. If Crawford's playing great, there's going to be immense pressure on Marty Turco. And given the last 2 years watching Turco play, I don't think he can handle that. So, I don't know. I'm very interested in the way that goaltending shakes out.
It's hard to. Turco's. He's clearly not what he was. But the difference between the Stars' blue line and the Hawks' blue line is just, and the systems they run is just so. There's such a gulf there. I love Stefan Robida as much as the next guy, but if he's the best you've got, then you've got some real problems. And, last year they're under Mark Crawford, who I'm pretty sure is clueless. So I don't know, what they're running down there. And, you can't get any more protection than he's going to get with this top four defenseman and a bunch of forwards in the system who help out. It's not just a defenseman. So what I do know is Turco is more mentally stronger than Huey was. As soon as something went wrong, Huey just fell to pieces. Turco's been through that sort of thing. I think he'll be able to handle it a little bit better. I don't know what you get out. We've never seen Corey Crawford for a very extended period of time. I was writing about this on the blog today. His numbers at the AHL are not, earth-shattering. They certainly don't make you sit up and take notice, but, I don't know. I don't really know how to judge AHL numbers. I know when he's been up here, for the most part, I like what I've seen. He seems very composed and fundamentally sound, but we're going to find out if it holds up in an NHL season. I can't honestly say if it will or won't.
You kind of talked about it, but, the three keys to the season, could it be player or a storyline? What are the things that you're most looking forward to dissecting and watching develop over the course of the season?
Where do you start? I'm interested to see what game they asked Dave Boland to play. Do they want to start inching him towards the number two role they keep telling us he's going to be, which none of us think he is? Or is he just going to be a checking center? And if he is, who do they play with him? You know, they don't have Ladd and Versteeg there anymore, who are good in both ends of the ice. So, you know, I know Skilly can't play that role, so I don't know where he plays. Can Stahlberg do that? You know, I don't know. So that's one thing I'm interested in seeing. As I said before, I think watching Kyle Beach, like, is going to be kind of more important than people realize, because if he can come up and keep his head on straight and be here for a majority of the year, he's going to produce. He's going to give the Hawks, you know, something they haven't really had, which is a power forward who brings it every night. And I think he could really make a huge difference. Maybe I'm putting too much pressure on a kid, but, you know, I'm really encouraged by what I've seen and heard from them. And, you know, past that, like, the three keys, you can say this about every team, but it's health. I mean, if Taves or Kane or Keith miss any significant time, then, you know, it's real trouble. I mean, look what happened when Brian Campbell missed time last year. Like, you know, if they miss any of the big three, then it gets icky real quick, because they just don't have the depth right now to cover for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's that goaltending situation that could go any number of ways. It really could. If Marty Turco, I mean, I could just imagine if Marty Turco shits the bed against the Red Wings on opening night. I could just imagine, you know, because, again, for the 5% of the people that are in that building that live on SecondCityHockey.com or any of the number of the message boards or whatever, for the most part, those people are sane, for the most part.
Let's not go nuts here.
95% of that people in that building, a great majority of them, if you pull them aside and ask them, will not be able to be explained why Niemi is not on this team.
Right.
And
no, I get it. And they could easily give him the UA treatment and turn every home game into a road game for him, which won't help. You know, I was shocked at the vitriol that UA faced from the get-go. Last year, you know, even goals that weren't even soft goals, you know, he was getting booed. Like, you know, I just couldn't figure out what he'd done to insult so many people that early in the season. I mean, he certainly didn't have a bad first season here. It wasn't great, but it wasn't, you know, felony worthy. I mean, you know, they're treating him like he beat his wife or something. And, if Turco gets off to a slow start, he very well could face the same thing, and I don't know who that helps. You know, I don't know why that makes people feel good, but you and I don't have the audience to change that, do we? So maybe one day, I'm with you. It certainly won't be a lack of effort from Turco. He seems so excited to be here and have this chance that, you know, he's certainly going to put the time in, and we'll just see if he's up to it, you know, physically or not.
Right, and he's here to play for a contract. I mean, he's got one more decent size, you know, like the one that Hobby Bullen went to Edmonton for. He's got one more decent size contract left in him. This is the best place for him to earn that contract. So of course, he's excited, and this, you know, he should be motivated and play very well.
The other thing is if you look at, you know, Turco's good years were in that Dallas system where he was only facing 25 shots a night. And I think the Hawks present such a unique situation for a goalie that there's so many games where you know, he might as well be sitting next to you and me in the 300 level for long swaths of the game, you know? I think for an NHL goalie, it's tough to get used to. He's already been through that once with the Hitchcock system, so he's at least somewhat familiar with playing, you know, having a paucity of action. So I think he's a little more prepared for it. Maybe it's a stretch, but I think he's a little more well-prepared for it than a lot of goalies would be.
If Marty Turco is sitting next to us at any point during the regular season, though, he better have a designated driver. especially if he's sitting next to me.
Yes, especially if he's sitting next to you.
The other thing, and I think conversely to what you were talking about with health, and not that I'm rooting for anybody to get injured, but in my opinion, okay, and I say this again, I don't believe the Blackhawks are going to repeat. I would be shocked if they did, but I do believe that they're going to be in the mix at the end. And that,
when I say the mix, I mean I expect the Blackhawks to be in the Western Conference Final.
Right. But, and then anything can sort of happen from there.
Yeah. But, you know, you talk about, you know, last year, what in the end really hurt the Red Wings, but also kind of helped them in the same way, is they played so much hockey, those guys. Their key players have played so much hockey that we knew that they were going to run out of gas.
Right.
And, you know, the same thing could happen to the Blackhawks. I don't really think that it matters one way or another where the Blackhawks finish. As long as they get into the playoffs, I think they can get to the Western Conference Final. There's nobody in the West that scares me that I don't think – I don't know what you think about this, but both the hockey news and the sporting news have picked the Vancouver Canucks to win the Stanley Cup, Sam.
Well, I've heard that song and dance before. I've heard it for 2 straight years, and maybe it's because I spent a lot of time hanging out with a Canucks fan, but I don't know. We agree with you, and we talked about this in our blog. No one in the West has gotten markedly better. You can argue that Canucks have improved, but I don't know. I still see the same. It's still the same guy in net, and I like Dan Hamhuis and Keith Ballard, but they don't scream to me top pairing on a cup winner. Do they to you?
No, I think the key guys that you're keeping out there, and I think are the best guys on that team. Christian Yerhoff had a great regular season last year.
And he sure did.
Every time I watch Alex Edler play, I get more and more impressed. So, excuse me, if there's more there to Alex Edler, I think if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, you should be excited. But they have no beef on that back line. So
right.
The other thing, and what the Blackhawks are missing with a guy like Bufflin, if you can't fill that, if Beach isn't the guy, if Bickle's only going to play on the fourth line and nothing more, that's where you can exploit the Vancouver Canucks, is that Ballard's not going to move anybody out of the way. Hamhuis is a mess. And, you know, Yerhoff didn't have a great postseason. Edler's very, very good. And Bieksa's, you know, been erratic. I love Kevin Bieksa, but he's erratic. And he may not be there at the end. We hear all sorts of trade rumors about him. So,
yeah, they have to move someone to get under the cap as it is. Yerhoff is not an Adam Smasher on the best of days. And they still have this problem where the past 2 years, you know, the Sedins and Burrows have just not matched their regular season level. Like, Burrows has completely disappeared the past 2 springs, you know, and he is their secondary scoring.
Burrows, I think that might be permanent. I don't think that's just a playoff thing. I think the
Magic could be, but then, you know, and the Sedins, while they haven't been as bad as we'd like to think, they haven't been dominant. You know, they certainly weren't dominant against us. Like, you know, and the Canucks really count on that, because behind them, you know, you have Kessler. Hey, I love Ryan Kessler's game, but I don't want to count on him to, you know, carry the scoring. And Mason Raymond, I thought Mason Raymond was their best player. Series long against us, you know, but, you know, that's it. Like, you know, Mikhail Samuelsson completely went away, and he's getting up there in age. I mean, if the Sedins don't score heavily in the playoffs, where's it going to come from them?
Yeah, I mean, with the Samuelsson, though, I always, anytime he's playing against the Blackhawks, you know that he's going to do something. And it's just one of
right.
those guys that, I mean, it's like Brendan Shanahan. You knew that guy was out there, and when the game was on the line, he was going to kill you.
Right. And for game one and two, he did. Past the first period of game two, like, you know, Samuelsson wasn't anywhere to be found. Like, you know, these are still issues they have to solve. So, yeah, you're right. Like, you're going to need a big body or a series of them to really make that defensive struggle. But, you know, speaking of Turco, you know, we're still waiting for Luongo to prove that he can be the guy, too. You know, I mean, he killed them. Like, he was just bad. For 3 of those games, at least, like, and he's still there, and I don't care that he's not the captain anymore. I don't think that makes a shred of difference.
I guess a good segue there. We're talking about Roberto Luongo, and, you know, he disappeared after Game 2 of that series, and even a part of Game 2. Bufflin was the big factor there. He's gone. What's the one guy that's gone, Sam, that you could pinpoint and says, that's what hurts us the most?
Well, when you sent me my little prep sheet, I was thinking about this today, and I guess my view has been skewed all summer because I knew Versteeg and Bufflin were gone. You know, I knew before last season that those were going to be their last year in Chicago. So it was my surprise that Andrew Ladd had to go. And for the longest time, I just thought that was the one that the Hawks would miss because, you know, he's just an intelligent player. He just sort of does everything right. And those are hard to find. But the more I thought about it, I think Versteeg is the one that's tricky to replace because how many 50-point guys do you have on your third line? You know, how often does that happen? I think it's pretty rare in the NHL. And, you know, he's that one-on-one player. He's like the only other player maybe besides, you know, Kane and Taves and Hossa, who's way more straight-line player who could, you know, play a man on, you know, one-on-one game, beat a couple defenders. But, you know, his production on a power play I always thought was a little disappointing. He should have more goals in the power play, but he could run something from the half boards. And, you know, that sort of creativity and the absolute balls to use it, you know, that doesn't come in a package, in one package too often. Now, he could be infuriating as hell, and, you know, we all, you know, would have those nights where we just wanted to wring his neck. But, you know, it's hard to replicate someone with that much, you know, that much ability in his hands. And so I think that's the one the Hawks are going to miss. Like, those are the points they're going to struggle to replace.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as much as I couldn't, you know, I was not upset at all with Chris Versteeg being gone because he's a tweener guy. I don't think, even though he was on the penalty kill, and this is the aspect of the team that I would be most concerned about. The fact that, as you were talking about before, what the players that the Blackhawks lost, I mean, especially talk about the penalty kill, the hardest minutes that you can play in hockey.
Right.
The Blackhawks lost Andrew Ladd, Chris Versteeg, who, you know, was out of the PK a lot. Burrish was a penalty killer. Colin Frazier was a penalty killer. That's the other thing. One thing that does concern me about Ryan Platooney is that, I mean, think about this. I mean, Colin Frazier, you know, Edmonton didn't re-sign Platooney because they have Colin Frazier now. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, what the heck's going on there? But, I mean, these are the guys that you've missed.
Spoiler, brain trust is never going to be a synonym for geniusness. You know, Ladd wasn't a full-time penalty killer. You know, he did, but he wasn't always out there. Burrish, you know, hasn't been out there all season. Frazier certainly was. You know, they are gonna miss him. They're gonna have to find out who else can do it. You know, they will have Bolin for a whole season this year. He's a decent penalty killer, so that makes up for some of it. But yeah, they're gonna have to piece that together. You know, can Jake Dowell kill penalties or Nathan Davis? You would know better than I would.
Nathan Davis isn't gonna be on the Blackhawks.
Okay, well then there you go.
I mean, my thing is, like, I expect, especially in the beginning part of the season, Joe Quenneville's job as a coach this year is going to be to groom guys so at the end of the season, when he is, like, so let's just say the Blackhawks are lucky enough to be healthy once again all year long. So at the end of the year, he can cut hard minutes like the penalty kill and you know, late in games when he has a lead. He can play guys, let's just say, for example, that Platooney and Skilly and Stahlberger on the team. He can trust those guys in those kind of situations. He can identify players that he can bring along slowly all year long, and then by the end of the year in the playoffs can be key role players on things like the penalty kill. Probably the most important guy on that PK is now gone, and the Blackhawks don't have a replacement, is Brent Sopel. You know, because now you have a situation where who's that fourth penalty killer? You got Seabrook, you got Jalmerson, you got Keith. And the fourth guy was Sopel. Who's that going to be? It better not be Brian Campbell. And
no, I don't think he wouldn't. Henry. I mean, he hesitates to put Campbell on the power play, much less the penalty kill. You know, it's either Henry or Boynton, isn't it? I mean, that's just the obvious. You know, it's going to be one of them. You know,
all this spells is more minutes for your most important players, and that's the key thing about missing guys like Ladd and Versteeg, and, you know, not Bufflin on the PK, no, but is the fact that it means more and harder minutes for your best players. And that's why I think it's imperative that Jack Skilly become a penalty killer, because he's got the speed. He can be, you know, he can be disruptive. You know, Jack Skilly's never going to be a scorer in this league because he skates with his head down, he has one shot, and it
it somehow always hits a defenseman in the shin pads. So he's never going to be a scorer. So
right, so can he turn himself into a third liner?
Yeah, so he needs to find his touch on the team, and part of that is going to be playing on the penalty kill.
Well, I mean, I certainly hope he can. You know, when I watch Jack Skilly, I'm not even sure he can stop. Like, I just sort of feel like he's going to turn around when he hits the end boards. You know, like, there just isn't much variance to his game, and I don't know if he has a brain or not, but he's going to have to make a leap this year to really be effective, you know, to make a difference. I hope he can, because if they could play him and Boland and Stolberg, I mean, that's going to be the fastest line they have. You know, by far, like, all those guys can fly. So, I hope it works, but I don't know. You know, I think that's a lot of things with the Hawks this year is we hope, but we don't know. And they're just as likely to go good as they are bad, but, you know, again, like, I agree with you. Quinville, the year, at least the first half of the year, is almost, it's not even about wins and losses, because they're going to win their share of games on talent alone. You know, but it's about building this team and grooming it for when the games really start to count. And, you know, no one can panic if their record in October and November is not what we're accustomed to.
People will, Sam. We got to be prepared.
Well, people will, but they, you know, will they? Like, I don't care what the message board is saying. You know, well, Quinville and Bowman, no, look, this is a work in progress. It's, you know, it's okay. We're second in the division in on Thanksgiving. Or, oh, you know, we're fourth, fifth in the conference. Like, you know, that's not what it's about. Like, the Penguins don't seem to care. You know, they're more than happy to finish, you know, fourth or whatever. They won the Stanley Cup from the fourth seed, and they were out of the playoff picture in March. You know, like, they know, you know, it's about just grooming the team and getting it in the shape you want. So I think the Hawks know that, though. I mean, you know, however he came to power, however sorted I think it is, Stan appears to me to be a pretty sharp guy. And I can't argue with anything he's done this summer. You know, to actually get what could be pieces for straight-up salary dumps, you know, that's a pretty neat trick, I think. So I think they know that. Quinville's a bright guy. He did get, you know, that whole Niemi QA thing when he was points chasing and we all thought he should have been trying to rebuild, you know, QA's confidence. It worked out in the end, but maybe that was just, you know, coming up sevens, but... You know, we'll see. But I really hope they spend the first 2 to 3 months just trying to figure out what goes where and taking the bumps that come along with it, knowing that when it all shakes out, there's still no team in the Western Conference that you can say is clearly ahead of them, like by an open legs, because I don't think there is.
I want to ask you this question because I think I've got, in Sam Feld, I've got one of the biggest Dave Boland supporters out there. So this would be you'd be a good gauge. One of my thoughts going into the season involves Patrick Sharp. Now, Patrick Sharp, and probably the thing that was the strength of the Blackhawks, aside from their defense, and the fact that the defense moves the puck so well, is the fact that in the playoffs, the Blackhawks rolled probably the deepest, aside from the Penguins, rolled the deepest group of centermen when you throw out Taves, then Sharp, then Boland. And the fact that those guys have such talent on either side of them. But they don't necessarily have that kind of talent this year, at least it doesn't appear at this point. Do you think, you think that Quenville's going to do this? Would you do this? Would you bump, like you were talking about earlier on in the hour, would you bump Boland up to the second line and move Sharp back to wing to bolster those two lines? Or, you know, and kind of, you know, maybe bring centers up, you know, to give – more guys a chance to get some experience, and so you are prepared for April, May, and June? Or do you leave it that way because that is something that separates you from the rest of the division and the conference, the fact that you roll Taves, Sharp, and Boland?
Well, I have the belief that you build your blue line and down the middle, and so I leave it as is unless – March rolls around and you can tell me they can go out and get someone who can be that number three center and a solid one. Like they tried 2 years ago with Paulson. And that was basically moving Boland to your number two center and Paulson is your number three. We didn't know at the time. Paulson only had like one arm when he got here. But, if there's a move like that to be made, then I consider it. But you know, until then, no, it is Taze, Sharp, Boland. I really love the way that Sharp has adjusted his game to be Hossa's center. Because, you know, to play with Hossa, you can't be the sniper. You know, you have to set him up, and I thought he did a pretty good job of that considering that's not really his game. So unless there is a move to be made that gets you the checking center, or the number two center who could just, you know, keep Follin where he is, because we still don't know. I don't know that David Follin can be a number two center. I see flashes of vision and hands that make you think he can, but you don't see it often enough. And we know he's effective as the checking center, as the Jordan Staal. We know that. I mean, he's done it for, how many centers did he take out of their games this postseason? So I leave it as is unless there's a surefire reason not to.
Two things. I think the most important player in the Blackhawks this year is Troy Brouwer. For himself, it's a contract year. It doesn't appear, if he has a good year, like he'll be back. Even though the Blackhawks have that $4 million that's coming back their way next year, they got Seabrook to pay. They're constantly going to have summers like they just had, just because they're
right.
So top heavy in the salary range. But
this has been a discussion on our blog. How big a raise does Seabrook really get? I mean, he's already at 3.5. You're not going to pay him $6 million for a year. What does Robin Regier make, 4.5? That's sort of what I see. I don't know that Seabrook is going to cause you that much with the headaches that Keith Taves and Kane's extensions did.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, though, because you look at that, Duncan Keith's going to make $8 million this year, but because he's got that Kovalchuk-type contract, Hossa-type contract, it ends up being in the low fives or mid-fives.
Right.
With Seabrook, are the Hawks really going to want to do that? Are they really going to want to commit to 10 years for a big physical defenseman? I don't think the Duncan Keith's contract's smart, first of all. But, I don't think that giving a contract to any player like that is smart. But especially now, this day and age.
Right. Well, you can't
Seabrook
now.
Seabrook especially. I mean, you're going to push the limits of what you can do with a guy like Seabrook and committing. I don't know that you do that. So what is Seabrook worth? If you're going to pay Duncan Keith $8 million a year, I mean, what do you pay? Is Seabrook six? That's a $2.5 million a year raise?
I don't think so. And the other thing is a player like Seabrook, because of the game he plays, there's always a chance his decline is pretty steep. And I think you can always go out and find a pretty competent defenseman who plays Seabrook's game. I don't know where there are a handful of guys who play Keith's game. I mean, those you just can't find those guys unless you want to pay them, a ridiculous amount of money. So I think it was more important, far more important, to lock up Keith for life than it is Seabrook. And I don't see a huge raise for Seabrook. I 4.5 just seems like the number to me. And if he really wants, he's still RFA, right? He's not unrestricted. I think he's restricted, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, he's still restricted. He's got one more.
Yeah,
one
I mean,
more
like, okay, it's one thing to offer Hjalmarsson an offer sheet for 3.5. Is someone really going to come in and offer Brent Seabrook $7 million a year for a guy who doesn't crack 10 goals?
I think the other thing, from what we see and we can make of the moves that Stan Bowman's making, it's like, okay, they've got Letty. It appears as though that they've targeted Letty and Lalonde as a future pairing. Okay,
right.
Well, all right, if those guys are a pair, Duncan Keith's not going anywhere. It's going to be a few years before you can move that Campbell contract as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the odd man out here? Because you also got Dylan Olsen in the pipeline. I mean, I think that, we might see a situation where they play chicken with Seabrook and it comes down to he just signs a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
One or a two-year deal that gets him to UFA at 27, 28, and then they deal with it then, because at that point they'll be able to see what they have. It might be a smart thing.
Dylan Olsen. Most people seem to like Dylan Olsen. I haven't seen him, but yeah, I mean, like, they seem to have their fair share of defensive prospects they're excited about. So they're going to have to be smart about it, but I just can't see Seabrook getting so much of a raise that, it's going to cost you Troy Brouwer, unless Troy Brouwer thinks he can make $4 million, which, if he's a back-to-back 25-goal scorer, maybe he can. I don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, it appears as though that his struggles at the end of last year were, personal, and things that he was letting get to him with his father and all that. And that's okay, but if he has those struggles again for whatever reason, then I think you have a situation where the Blackhawks, because we all know how Joe Quenneville loves to toy with his lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there'd be a situation where he would move. And the one thing that, you know, and you alluded to it, you know, if you play with Marian Hossa, you're not the sniper. Well, what do we know about Patrick Sharp is he can score. He is a sniper.
Right.
And his best line mate is Patrick Kane. I mean, that's where he's had his most success, and a lot of guys would have that kind of success. But Sharp is a special kind of a guy. He actually can score. He does move to spots. He finds those holes. He's got that knack. So, you know, and the other thing, with your paying, and I'm, you know, admittedly, I'm not the biggest Dave Bowman fan. I do believe he's a third-line center. But if you're Stan Bowman, going forward where you have to allocate funds in such a way, I think if I'm the general manager, I want to find out, you know, and I'm telling everybody that he is, but I want to find out at some point if he is my number two center. And if he can just, like he did 2 years ago with Marty Havlett, just get the puck to Marty Havlett and worry about your
get out of the way
situation. So, you know, I think that at some point, it'll be the key there is Brouwer. If Brouwer's not on pace to be a 25-goal scorer and he's missing some of his defensive assignments and he's sort of, you know, lightheaded out there, I think that that's something you're going to see. And I think it would be a smart thing because, again, at some point you have to find out whether or not Dave Bowen's a second-line center.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I have a pretty high level of trust with Troy Brouwer. I mean, his hockey IQ has never been something I've, you know, debated. Like, even in his rookie year when his you know, nickname was Clank, you know, he gets to the right spots. He worked on his skating so he can get to those quicker. I see nothing but a solid season from Troy Brouwer. You know, I'm sort of interested because I imagine this will be the first time Dave Bowland is full-time on the power play. He would have to be, I would think. And I'd like to see what he does with consistent power play minutes because he hasn't gotten them before. But, you know, and somewhere else other than the point. You know, I'd like to see what he does, you know, on the half wall. But, we'll see. Like, I think he could rack up, he could improve on his point total with some consistent playing time.
All right, a few more things, predictions and such before we go. Antti Niemi, signed with the San Jose Sharks. I don't know about you, but I think it's the perfect place for him. 1 year deal. Sharks should be good enough that, you know, I mean, he's competing with Nitamaki out there, but he's probably the odds-on favorite at this point. I mean, here's the thing with Niemi. Yeah, his agent screwed up. You know, he didn't read the situation with the Hjalmarsson offer sheet. He probably thought like I thought, and that how could the Blackhawks explain to their fans that they're letting their Stanley Cup championship goaltender go?
Right.
I'm not going to get too all over Bill Zito's case about it because I probably would have made the same mistake if I was in his shoes. But he got him to the right place. There were only two places for Niemi. It was probably either Washington or San Jose. Go to a place that's on track to win, and San Jose's even better because if San Jose wins, what's the variable there that has changed? It's the goaltender. And, you know, if it's, you know, Niemi's in the net. And if they lose, who's at fault? It's not Niemi. It's because Thornton's
right.
A loser. Marlowe's has been the constant there. I think it's the perfect place for Niemi. But how do you think it all shakes out for Niemi this year?
I think he probably has a season a lot like he had here. I think he will split time with Nitamaki because Nitamaki always goes through a month-long stretch where he stops everything. And he'll push Niemi, and we'll take over the role for 5-6 weeks, you know, off the glow of that. But I've seen the San Jose defense when it counts. I don't buy it. Like, he's not going to have the protection that he had here, and he leaves his fair share of rebounds lying around, too, and they're not as quick to clear them as the Hawks defensemen are. I think he'll be what he is, which is slightly above average. He's not going to win them a cup. He didn't win the Hawks a cup. You know, they didn't win despite of him either. But numbers, like, he'll win more than he loses for sure. The team's too good, and then his goals against and save percentage will not be, you know, ridiculous. You know, 2.3, 2.4, somewhere around 905, 909. I think probably sounds about right, but. We're not talking about an all-star here or, you know, or anything like that. He'll be solid for sure. But, you know, letting Nabokov during the regular season was solid too.
Right. I'll say this about Miami, and I was, you know, like, I mean, I was a man on an island at some points, like you guys were over there about Miami. It's like, you know, be cautious with a guy like that because you really don't know what you're getting. Regular season is one thing, playoffs is another. I judged Miami based on what he did in the postseason, and he was extremely well composed. I was very impressed with the adjustments he made mid-series. You know, you look at that Nashville series, what was Nashville doing? Where were they having the success? You know, in the early part of that series where the Blackhawks defensemen were standing around looking at the ceiling, Niemi was giving up rebounds, and Nashville were crashing the net and scoring. So what did Niemi do? He shored up his game. He came out. He challenged more, and he kicked the rebounds. Since he was out high, he kicked them out farther, and, you know, and he kept them in front of him. You know, every goaltender in the league has rebounds, you know, and some more than others, but it's where do you kick the rebounds is the most important. And as that series went along, he kept them in front of him, so he had a chance to recover. If you're kicking them to the side, and there's, you know, you're out in the front, there's no, you know, you got an empty net there if there happens to be an opposing jersey there. So he, you know, and then, you know, you look in the Vancouver series, what were they doing? You know, we all know what the book on Niemi is. It's go high. He goes down early. So what did he do in that series? He adjusted as it went along. He stayed up. You know, a lot more. He came out, he challenged their shooters to cut down on the angles again. San Jose, I mean, San Jose, I thought was stupid in that series, and they just shot from every angle with no thought whatsoever.
Right.
But he stood tall in that series.
That's the one series that he was, I thought he won. You know, it sounds weird when you sweep a team, but I mean, the one series I point to, and you say, like, hey, he kept them in. Three of those games, at least two of those games, games one, game three, and, you know, and was like, was the difference between those two teams. But, you know, the other three series, yeah, he got better as it went along, but he wasn't the reason they won those series.
I thought, though, that he was the most impressive, you know, against the Flyers, because, I mean, throw game one out. Everybody was nervous. It was one of the more amazing games that I've ever seen at the United Center. But, you know, the Flyers took a completely different approach in that they sort of stole a book from Nashville, but they did it a little bit different. That my biggest concern going into the playoffs about Niemi was side to side and the fact that he just did not move well. There were a lot of openings. He would overshoot moving side to side. He shored that up as well, and he stayed deeper in his net. He was very good getting from post to post. And, you know, so he covered the back door because that's what Philly was doing there. They were trying to get him moved side to side, attack that back door. You know, he was able to make those adjustments, and he was never flustered. And that was the thing I was most impressed about with Niemi. I think he's an above-average goaltender. I don't think he's a great goaltender. I don't think he ever will be. But I was really impressed by him in the postseason. And it remains to be seen. I mean, this Marty Turco, he'll be fine. And I don't think, like you said, I don't think he's going to win him, just like Niemi. I don't think Marty Turco is going to win you a cup. I don't think he'll lose you a cup. But the most important thing here, and the biggest storyline coming out of this year, is what happens with Corey Crawford. Because next summer, you'll have money to play with, and the guys out in the market will be Niemi. If he makes it to UFA, Thomas Volkoon, Ilya Brizgalov, Craig Anderson. Those are the guys out there next summer. It's a bad year for Niemi to be a UFA.
Right, but if Crawford proves that he could actually handle it, you can allocate that money elsewhere.
Yeah, All right, one more before I let you go, or a couple, maybe one quick one. NHL coach to be fired.
I'm going to take a chance here and say Bruce Boudreau. Can I do that?
Sure.
I think there's just so much pressure on the Capitals this year based on two disappointing play. And now I like Bruce Boudreau, and you certainly can't argue with what he's done for the Caps system and attitude, but I sort of wonder about him under pressure. There were a lot of times the past two playoffs where he seemed to lose his cool, and I don't know what kind of message that sends to your team. So let's say the Caps come out of the gate slowly, and now in that division it's really hard to come out of the gate slowly, but you know, if they're kind of muddling around and not looking like a cup contender, you know, the Caps owner is not the kind of type to stand around and let things simmer. You know, I think he's a doer. So I'll be the only one saying it, I think he'll probably be the first to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys are going to – I mean, not every year guys are – that's stupid. I mean, every year guys get canned. Davis Payne, I think, is a guy in St. Louis who will eventually get canned. A lot of expectations in Boston this year. I think by the end of the year, Claude Julien will be tuned out and be set to show the door. I'm going to go, though, and we talked about the Vancouver Canucks. I'm going with Alain Vigneault. There are so many expectations of that team. And they got some injuries to deal with in the beginning of the season. I like Keith Ballard, but I don't – putting stock in Keith Ballard and Dan Hamhuis and asking them to be – whether they're your first and second or your third and fourth defenseman, I don't see how the Canucks got any better this season. And there's an over-reliance on the Sedins there. I don't think that I talked about it before. I think Alex Burrows' time is up, and they don't have any beef up front. And I mean, talk about they don't have an ass beater on the defense. They don't have any meat up front. This is a soft team. And I think that they're going to struggle, and by December, Vigneault will be showed the door. I think by the end of the year.
Talk in the head as well.
Yeah. So I think those things, and one more, order of the Central. How do you think the Central shakes out?
I think the Hawks still win it, actually. Not with the point total they had last year, but I think they edge out Detroit. And, I don't know how he does it, but, like, Nashville's going to finish third whether they need to or not. Like, this seems to be the way it's going to be. I think St. Louis will be a hell of a lot closer to them this year than they were, just because I don't think St. Louis can be as bad as they were to get out of the gates last year. And I think Columbus is going to be terrible. So they'll be weighted to the bottom there. But I still think the Hawks win it. Maybe there's only the 3 seed. This year, but as we said, it doesn't matter. I don't think they need to win the division. If Detroit wins the division, I'm not going to be panicking. But I look at the Hawks winning, and I think the Hawks are just slightly better, and I still think they win it. Same order of finish as it was last year, with a little tightening of the gaps, I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. Red Wings take it, not by much, but I think that they're gonna take the division. I think this will be one that's. The last week of the season will be decided. And I'm really looking forward and got my fingers crossed on an opening round L.A.-Chicago series because I think that would be a lot of fun.
I wouldn't want any part of that.
It would be fun. It would be great. It would be great hockey.
It would be. Although, there's always a team that before the season starts, you say, oh, God, this team, this is their time. This is when they come in. Like, it all just, the pin gets pulled and everything just sort of falls apart. Slowly, it was Boston last year, and I can't see how the Kings will be bad, but maybe they're not. They're still a little thin down the middle for me. You can't help but love their defensive core, and they've got some talented wingers, but past Kopitar, Jared Stoll and Michael Hanser's really do that much for you. And,
I think by the end of the season, Brad Richards is going to be on the LA Kings.
Well, see, that's a problem. that's a major problem. Like, that changes the landscape completely. I like Wayne Simmons. I like a lot of their wingers. I think Dustin Brown's one of the most fun players in the league to watch. If they shore up down the middle, then they go from. They're probably the team that would scare me most in the entire conference.
Yeah, I mean, their biggest thing is in net, who's going to emerge there. You got Bernier, the young kid that's supposed to be the franchise goaltender, and which Jonathan Quick shows up this year.
Well, I like Jonathan Quick. I don't think you can play any goalie the amount of games he played this year. I think he's a good goalie, but there was just nothing left of him by the time the playoffs rolled around. What do you have, 65, 70 starts? This day and age, there is no goalie who can play that much. I mean, Brodeur can't even do it, Kiprasov is in a puddle by April every year. I think they really did him an injustice, so they're going to need both of them to be good, so neither one of them has to play that much.
Yeah, my only question is, it's a different atmosphere this year because Eric Erisberg never pushed Quick and Bernier. If he plays the way he did in the A, he should push him a little bit. But All right, I'm going to let you go, Sam. I'm sure you got
okay,
an exciting Monday night ahead of you. What's
going
on with you?
Well, we just started some prep work, be on the lookout for Patrick Kane's summer vacation. I think that'll be entertaining for everyone. Biggest thing.
Lindsay Lohan.
What's that? That's a good question. If we can get her to a game, that'll happen.
If Ryan Urlacher can date Paris Hilton, Patrick Kane could swing Lindsay Lohan.
Well, Patrick Kane might be too short for Lindsay Lohan. You know, the women don't like short guys, so, I don't know. We'll see. I'm actually very interested to see what Patrick Kane looks like. Is he going to come into camp like 10 pounds overweight? Is he even skating? You know, does anyone know? That's a storyline to watch for sure. But, as far as the Indian goes, I can tell everybody, it's going to be 20 pages this year, instead of 16, so you'll be getting a little more bang for your $3.
It's not going to be like the old Blackhawks Pro or even the current Blackhawks program with those four pages, those four extra pages are all advertisement, are they?
Well, that'd be great, but no, it's going to be, there'll be at least two pages new of material. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do with them. But it'll just feel a little more weighty in your hands, you know, not just metaphorically, but physically, it'll feel a little more weighty.
And can we expect an exhibition issue or?
No, I learned my lesson last year. We're not trying that again. The first issue will be October 9th. It'll be a season preview issue, of course, featuring yourself and, you know, player-by-player breakdowns, and I'm sure the Feather will be the other columnist that night. But, yeah, no, I learned my lesson last year. Doing issues for pregame, for exhibition games, just not a good idea.
All right, Sam, thanks you so much for joining us. And
thank you, Chris, anytime.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking again over the season. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. I will be back next Monday, September 20th, with a guest to be determined. I haven't even thought of it yet, but we'll have somebody. And
I'm sure you'll click something up.
Yeah. Until then, everybody, thanks for joining us, and good night, everybody.